Morning. My name is Frits van Evert. I work at Wageningen University and Research Center in Wageningen, the Netherlands. And I'm very happy to be here today and talk to you about our work. And I would like to thank the organizers, of course, for inviting me to be here today. Potato is an important crop in the Netherlands. It's grown on 160,000 hectares, so by area it's not exactly the largest crop, but it is the most profitable one, and so a lot of our work tends to focus on this crop. Most growers apply the recommended rate of nitrogen at planting, and that would be about 200 to 250 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare. Typically they use a uniform rate, without regard for any spatial variability, spatial heterogeneity that might exist. But more importantly, also without regard for any year-to-year variability in nitrogen requirement of the crop. In the temperate climate of the Netherlands, soil nitrogen supply varies widely from year to year. And so the recommended rate is sufficient in maybe two-thirds of the years. It is more than sufficient in about two-thirds of the years, and it will also be not sufficient in occasionally. So we have worked on, in this picture I detail a little bit more this variability in year-to-year nitrogen requirement. The green curve is the amount of nitrogen taken up by a crop that is growing well, that amount that is taken up by the crop will, of course, vary from year to year, depending on the weather, depending on the planting date, and so on. And this variability is indicated by the gray area behind the green curve. The red curve is the cumulative amount of nitrogen available from the soil, resulting from the decomposition of organic matter. And that also varies from year to year, depending on mostly the soil temperature and soil moisture. And again, the variability here is indicated by the gray area behind the curve. Now, the difference between what the crop needs and what the soil supplies needs to be supplied by fertilizer. And you can see that depending on where the curves fall in each year, that might be a fairly large amount of fertilizer, or it might be a relatively small amount of fertilizer. And now, our work has shown that in many years, the best result is obtained by splitting the nitrogen application. So then typically, two-thirds of the recommended rate is applied at planting. And then halfway through the growing season in late June, scouting of the crop is used to determine how crop nitrogen uptake is progressing and to see whether the crop needs any more nitrogen, and how, if so, how much. So here again, the green curve indicates how much nitrogen we would like the crop to take up as a function of time. That curve would shift up and down depending on the target yield, and it would shift left to right or have a slightly different shape depending on the weather. But nevertheless, we can, if we are in this case, in this example here at the day 190, we know how much nitrogen we would like the crop to have taken up. And in this case, that's, let's say, 180 kilograms nitrogen. So if we go out and we measure, we find that the crop has taken up only 140, then the difference, 40 kilograms, is supplied as sidewest nitrogen, and that is then sufficient to prevent any negative effect on yield. Now, there are many ways of measuring crop nitrogen uptake in season, but of course the most convenient one, and the most rapid one, and the most cost-effective one is measuring crop reflectance. You can do that using many different sensors. In our experiments, we typically use the crop scan on the left, top left. But other options are possible, the Optrix, you can use a satellite imagery also on the top right there, the Green Seeker sensor in the bottom right, or the Yara N sensor mounted on the roof of a tractor there on the bottom left. They're all good sensors and we all use those. But this is a symposium about aerial imagery, so we work also on that. And in fact, the reason for that is that while these sensors are all capable of giving the appropriate data, the appropriate information to make nitrogen recommendations, there are some problems. The satellite imagery is typically not very useful in the Netherlands because of clouds. We have clouds on approximately 50% of the days, so you could easily go a whole growing season without having a single useful satellite image. And farmers, for several reasons, are reluctant to buy these sensors and put them on their tractors, and so the proximal sensors and put them on their tractors. So that is really an obstacle to the adoption of our recommendation system. So we are now working with a large farmers cooperative and see if UAVs can fill the gap. So this year we had some experiments with objective to calibrate aerial imagery to nitrogen uptake, the above ground part of it, and then to develop a relationship between above ground nitrogen and whole crop nitrogen. We had two experiments. We had an experiment in two locations, a sandy and a clay soil, two cultivars in each location, an early and a late one, so different cultivars in different locations. Nitrogen levels of 0, 50, 100, and 150% of the recommended rate, and for intermediate harvests in the period after tuber growth has started, and of course a final harvest. We made reflectance measurements with crop scan in this experiment and with a UAV. The flights were flown by a commercial operator. They used the EB aircraft from Sensefly was used with the multispec 4C camera from Arinov. That's a 10-bit camera and it has red, green, red edge and near-infrared bands. Flights were executed at about 50 meters height, giving us pixels of about 5 centimeters square. We used calibration plates in these experiments to check the accuracy of the reflectances as that were measured with the drone. So this is an overview of the experiment in one of the locations. You can see right in the middle of the picture there the calibration plates. These are aluminum plates, about a meter squared, painted with in various shades of gray between white and black, with reflectances of between 5 and 50% or so. This is another view of the very same spot, another view of the calibration plates, and you can also see that one of the harvests has already taken place, the periodic sampling. And this is then the kind of image, the reflectance image that comes out of that camera. I'm showing you here the near-infrared band for the 15th of June in the Valtermond location. The experiment is the rectangular thing that goes there from the top left to the bottom right on the screen. You can see there are two cultivars in strips, and I've indicated where the 0N treatment plots are located. There's only one 0N treatment in each cultivar. These were not replicated, the other levels were. There's no scale in this image, but the scale goes from 0 to 1, so the very whitest would be 1, and absolutely black would be 0. Here I am showing you the relationship between crop scan, between reflectance. There is an off button on that thing. Here I'm showing you reflectance of the calibration plates as measured by the crop scan on the horizontal axis and as measured by the multispec on the vertical axis for the green, the red edge, and the near band. The one-to-one line is indicated, and you can see that for the red edge and for the near, there is a very good correspondence over the whole range between multi-spec and crop scan through reflectance. You can also see that the red and the green sensor, they saturate at about 20%. And that's logical because you don't expect reflectances larger than 20% in those bands in a cropping field situations. So we really should have put more calibration plates between 0 and 20 for that. So we didn't think that through completely well at the beginning of the season. This is the same kind of picture, but now for the four dates and for near infrared and just in Lelystad. And you can see that for the different dates, there is indeed for every date, there is a good correspondence between multispec and crop scan reflectance. But if you were to draw calibration lines for the different dates, they would be slightly different. But all in all, I think there is a very good, the reflectance values provided by our commercial providers are actually very good. So that allows us to go to the second stage, look at vegetation indices. The bands in the multispec allowed us to calculate the following bands, the NDVI, the NDRE, the normalized different wet edge index, various formulations of the chlorophyll index, and weighted difference vegetation index. And that last one has a correction factor for soil reflectance based on a separate measurement of reflectance of a piece of bare soil. If you plot some of these indices versus nitrogen uptake, this is for the in each of these plots the value of the the value of the vegetation indices on the horizontal axis and the vertical axis is crop nitrogen uptake. You can see that there is a fairly good relationship for several of the indices. Put some regression lines in there. You can also see there is a fair bit of scatter. I don't think that is... the amount of scatter is actually in line with what we see from other experiments, also with handheld instruments close to the ground and so on. So I'm pretty happy with that. Also, this is actually a slightly preliminary. There are some yield data that have come in, corrections on yield data that have come in and that I have not put in this graph yet. So all in all, I think that in the end, we will be able to come up with a very good prediction of nitrogen content, nitrogen uptake, from the aerial imagery, as provided by our commercial providers. But that's only part of the story in the case of potatoes. Potatoes, of course, in the beginning, they're like another crop. All the biomass is above ground, and you can see it. But then once tubers start growing, that story isn't true anymore. So we measure with our reflectance measurements only that which we can see, which is above the ground. And that is increasingly becomes a smaller fraction of the total amount of biomass or the total amount of nitrogen. So I will show you three ways in which we try to deal with this situation. The first one, I'm reproducing here a graph from a publication from a couple of years ago, is to just be naive and say, okay, I have vegetation index, I have total biomass or total nitrogen uptake, and I can regress the one on the other. Then you get a sort of a curvy linear relationship or a piecewise linear relationship as is drawn here. And that works well, but of course you make now implicit assumptions about when does tuber growth start and how quickly does it proceed. You're not able to take account of variations in year to year in the relative rate, growth rates of the crop and the tubers and so on. So it's not a very satisfying approach. A second method might be to adopt this method given in the literature by Nathanson et al. 30 years ago, who observed that at the beginning of the growing season, all the biomass is above ground, pretty much all of it. And then when tuber growth starts, the fraction above ground decreases. It decreases. You could say linearly, It can use time as on the horizontal axis, or thermal time as here. And that's a reasonable approximation and slightly mechanistic. You can see when you plot a bunch of data, this is our data, not data from Natursum. If you plot that, there's a fair amount of scatter, more than we would really like. And that's to be expected, because in some years there might be a lot of radiation and cool temperatures, or a lot of radiation and warm temperatures, and that would have different effects on how fast growth is and how fast this relationship changes. So I think our the preferred method of making the extrapolation from above ground, from a measurement of above ground biomass to total biomass in potatoes, would be to use a crop growth model. So that's what we've done here for one of the treatments in our experiment of this year. In the panels, the three panels, you see on the left-hand side total dry matter of the crop, with the dots indicating measurements and the line, of course, the simulated biomass. Then in the middle panel, we have super dry weight, and then in the right-hand panel, the ratio of the two, the fraction of above ground. Well, not the ratio, but anyway, the fraction of biomass that's above ground. And we can use this information to derive in a way that takes into account cultivar differences, that takes into account radiation, planting date, temperature, soil moisture, nitrogen supply, and they will all have an effect on how that really, the fraction above ground changes over time, and we can pick that up with a crop growth model. There might be other advantages to using a crop growth model for this. Because when we want to run a simulation model for farmers' fields, we may not be able to get all the input data with the level of precision that we would like. So, for example, date of emergence is an important moment, is an important parameter to run this crop growth model. But that's typically not observed in a farmers' field. The farmers will know the date when they planted the crop, but not necessarily when it emerged. And so if we were to have several overflies with a drone, we would be able to have measurements of biomass at different points in time, and then we can just play with the date of emergence until we find one that it fits the range of possibilities, of course, for the planting date, but that also gives a good simulation results, good fit with the data. What I described to you now is a very simple method of doing this. There's more complex, more advanced methods possible. And then the other thing is that once we have that model running for a particular field, we can also use it to make a forecast of yield. Because ultimately, when we're going to make a nitrogen recommendation, we want to know what kind of yield target are we fertilizing for. So a farmer might have a pretty good idea of what yield is going to be. But halfway through the growing season, a whole bunch of things have happened already, and you should be able to narrow down that range a little bit. Maybe this is going to be a very good year, and we can up the nitrogen rate a little bit, or maybe we see it's not going to be such a good year, and then we don't have to supply all that much nitrogen. So we can use a stochastic modeling approach, where we use realized weather until today, and then historic weather of the last 30 years to continue the simulation, and we get a fairly good idea of what yield is going to be. And then we can adjust our nitrogen rate recommendation. So I hope I have convinced you at this point in time that we are able to make valid, useful nitrogen recommendations to farmers in a very practical situation. But that's not where our job stops, because in order to get this out to farmers and have it work and have it be adopted by them, there is a couple of things that need to happen. First of all, large amounts of data are going to be handled. This is the aerial imagery that needs to be collected by somebody and put somewhere. Where is the field, when was it planted, what cultivar, that kind of stuff. And then we, of course, the weather data to run the simulation models. This task is all complicated by the fact that there are multiple parties. Typically, the drone operator will be one party, weather people, another party, our model must run somewhere. That's the next point. The recommendation must be generated. And then when you've all done all that, then we also need to generate a task map. Get the data out in such a way that it can be put onto the terminal of the tractor and sent to the fertilizer spreader. In order to make sure that all these things happen and work, we have teamed up with a number of partners in the Netherlands to create something called AkkerWeb. AkkerWeb is a web-based data portal, a web-based portal for data and algorithms. And I will show you quickly how that works. It is something that has an app store, like on your telephone. You can buy apps. Some of them are for free. You can then use these apps to, in our case, make a nitrogen recommendation. But would be able to set something up like this for nitrogen recommendations. So this is actually part of a very large effort in which we make recommendations for a whole series of things in farming. So we have late blight fungicide recommendations, we have recommendations for liming, for herbicide applications, for nematode control, for nutrient management planning, and then also for this nitrogen side dress. And I want to quickly go through four apps that are on the screen here that are relating to our case today. That is the cropping scheme app, the satellite app, the sensor data app, and the nitrogen sensing app. I will look at this, the sensor data app. It has an import button there. You can click that, it opens up a dialog, you can upload a drone image. And then a drone image is represented here as a tile. I've uploaded the NDRE map for the 27th of June for one of our experiment locations from this year, which is showing here. And if you can see, there are some green areas on that map. That was where our zero N treatments were lying. The cropping scheme app can be used to indicate where fields are. This is just a farmer's field of a farmer whom we are working with. This is our experiment field of this year, one of them. And if you select one of these fields, then on the top left hand of the screen, you can see that there's a number 2 that appears. That number 2 appears that there are two things that AkkerWeb allows me to do with this field. If we click on that number 2, then we get this screen here. And you can see that it offers, that AkkerWeb offers us now to retrieve a satellite imagery for our field, or to make a nitrogen recommendation. So if I click on that nitrogen recommendation, then I get this screen where the UAV image has been retrieved, the NDRE has been translated into nitrogen uptake. And in the panel on the left-hand side of the screen, there's a number of things that, a number of buttons that I can twist. They have to fine-tune the nitrogen recommendation. There's, for example, the date of emergence, the target yield, and so on. And once I'm happy with that the values that I have entered are correct, I can generate the recommendation like this. So you can see, again, here are zero N treatments, which are, according to this application, need more nitrogen than the rest of the field. Okay, that's to be expected. So then on the left, if I scroll a little bit further down, I get a number of links to get this prescription map for this recommendation out in a variety of formats. And some of those, there's comma separated, I think, a shape, but also ISO XML, which can be loaded onto several onto the machinery from several manufacturers. Now, unless you think that we do this only for experimental fields, this is a farmer's field. So one of the, we have a network of, I don't know, about 30 farmers or so who are actively collaborating with us and testing out this technology for the last few years already. So this is one of those fields where nitrogen uptake was sensed. I must say this was not by a drone, but with the end sensor from Yara. But that gives you then a nitrogen citrus prescription map. And this has been applied, and it, generally it gives good results. So in summary, I hope that I've convinced you that we know how to use UAV imagery to provide nitrogen recommendations to farmers in a very practical sense. The decision rules that are behind that recommendation are sound and based on solid evidence. And I stress that point because you see websites popping up left and right where companies offer all kinds of things to farmers, but very often it's not very clear how that recommendation is made and whether there's actually any factual basis to it. And so we try to, this is also off-putting to farmers, this is the message that we're getting back, and so it's another driver behind our effort with AkkerWeb to have sort of vetted algorithms, make them available to farmers in that way. And then also organization is critical. So this is not something you do by yourself. There's a whole bunch of partners involved. Data needs to flow between the various partners. And yeah, very boring, but the technical connections also need to be made. It's no good having a shape file if then a farmer says, how do I load this onto my John Deere or my Vanderland or whatever spreader that I have, and get stuck there. We have had that in the past, and we've solved that problem now. So over the years, there's been a number of projects where we've executed this line of work. Currently, there's a fairly large public-private partnership in the Netherlands supporting this, and these are the logos of most of the partners, and it's always possible you forget one. But I'm happy and proud to show these here. So that's all I've got for you today. Thank you for your attention, and I'd be happy to answer any questions. The question is, what kind of crops can we use? The crops can, as far as I know, the filters are, you can put different filters in there. Our filters have a bandwidth of 20 nanometers. So half bandwidth of 10. We have two kinds of units. We have 8 and 16 units, 16 band units. Yeah.
When you run those correlations between the ground sensor and the drone, what's the difference in area between those two measurements?
Zero, because the ground sensor is held. I should repeat the question. The question is, what is the difference between the area sensed by the aerial sensor and the proximal sensor, the handheld sensor, when we make the calibration between the two? So we hold the handheld sensor very close to the calibration plate, so it sees only the calibration plate, but pretty much the whole calibration plate. And the aerial imagery, we cut out the piece, the pixels that are exactly on the calibration plate. So I think the correspondence is pretty much 1-to-1. Yeah.
One more question, and then we move to
very interesting presentation.
Thank you.
Have you tried to use the RGB camera on the ED and then make a point cloud to get an estimate of the biomass instead of the vegetation?
The question is whether we've used the RGB camera on the EV to estimate biomass using the RGB bands, I suppose, rather than using the vegetation indices that come out of the multispec camera. No, we have not tried that. And I'm not sure there would be any advantage in that. The multispec bands are the ones, obviously, that are useful for vegetation indices. We calibrate them also. But we could presumably do the same thing with the RGB cameras. I think the disadvantage would be that the bands are a little bit less well defined, narrow defined with the RGB. And they might not be in the center wavelengths there might not be appropriate for the vegetation industries that we're interested in. But other than that, yeah, it's the same kind of thing basically.
Thank you very much.
Okay.